Hey, everybody. This week was far more fun than I expected. So there's this, and this is a bit candid behind the scenes, but there's this little group of you know, when you work in this industry and you do these events all over everywhere as a nation, whatever a region is, you run into the same people every day and you develop friendships. And you guys remember Will Schragas from a few weeks ago and Karen Igalka from Compass Box a few weeks ago. And there's all these connections that you run into. And I've been hearing about Elise for about a year now, and I've been dying to get her on. And she was supposed to come on a couple weeks ago. We had a disconnect. But something came up and we had to cancel the episode. So I was really, really excited about getting Elise on the episode today and talking about McAllen and Highland Park. Highland Park holds a special place in my heart, with my wife and our, which I get into that in the story, in the episode about getting engaged with my wife. And McAllen is just this iconic brand that's been around for a long time. So I was really, really excited about getting her on. Ben is someone that's local with the Houston Bourbon Society and a friend of mine. And we went on a trip to Kentucky recently, and we talked about his recent trip in McAllen to McAllen. So this seemed like just a natural fit to drink, to learn about everything that's happening on going on with McAllen, the changes happening with Highland Park, and just drinking. I mean, best part of life, right? So it was a tremendously fun episode that absolutely flew by. We talked about literally everything. We've talked about everything they're doing, the collaborations, the potential for our local group to do a barrel pick a little bit. And of course, we talk a little bit about the sherry season controversy and the way that companies have to change or die, right? So that's one perspective of the whole sherry controversy. And for those who aren't privy, and for those who are, I'm going to repeat what you already know. For years, whiskeys were sherry matured, meaning that a lot of sherry whiskeys spent their time in ex-sherry barrels for the entire maturation. So 12 years, 21 years, whatever. The problem is that it's not sustainable, especially in today's market with a surge of fans in the realm of whiskey. So then people started doing sherry finishes where they would spend just a little bit of time in a sherry barrel. And since then, we've moved to sherry seasoning, which is a new term, very new term. People are like, what does this mean? So we get into that a little bit with Highland Park, with McAllen. And Elise could not have been nicer, couldn't have been easier to talk to. I'm extremely excited to get some of her friends on. I'd love to get William Grant, which Danielle gets talked about quite a bit in this episode. It's just an incredible time. It was awesome. So this week's episode takes place after the Whiskey Social, so I'm not going to push the event on you guys yet again. I'm sure it was an incredible event with absolutely no headaches and not stressful at all. But we'll see. You guys, I'm sure, will hear about it. This week's episode is sponsored by, as always, Brown-Forman. They're huge sponsors, huge fans. They are bringing the heat at this week's event, which, again, has already happened. But also, this week was also sponsored by McAllen and Highland Park. So I'm huge fans of the brands, and I couldn't have been more excited to talk about it. So my rambling's done, I promise. So without further ado, real quick, guys, as always, you can get every week's episode locally at 94.1 FM Sports Map, as well as iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Facebook. We've seen a lot of people move from the Facebook realm to the iTunes realm because it's just easier to listen in the car. And I couldn't be happier about it. So without further ado, Elise Bleckman from McAllen and Highland Park and Ben Songer. Cheers.
The 12-year Burgundy was actually the first Scotch I ever purchased, and I still have that bottle on my bar. I mean, it sort of means something to me to be the first one that I've actually truly enjoyed. I mean, I grew up in a household. My father's always been a Scotch drinker. One of the reasons we just went to Scotland was because he's never been there.
So I actually invited Ben on today. We made a trip to Kentucky a couple weeks ago to pick out a few barrels for the group.
Yep.
And Ben had literally just gotten back from Scotland
days
and visiting
prior.
McAllen's new distillery.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's amazing. And I'm so infuriously jealous of you.
You haven't been yet.
I've seen the picture. Yet. It's amazing.
It's spectacular. Insane. So I do have to disclaim, I was not, I know, the first HBS member to go to the new McAllister.
Oh, really?
So Mike and Jessica Salopek.
Oh, that's right.
Good friends of mine. Actually, aside, I grew up with Mike in Pittsburgh. So long story short, we've kind of reconnected here in Houston and HBS,
and
which has been really
–
and now I'm leaving to go back to Mike and I's homeland. But at any rate, yeah, him and his wife were the first folks to actually visit. They were there about a week prior
to
me. So disclaimer, shout out to Mike. You were number one.
Shout out to Mike and
my and Jessica, yeah, exactly.
Mike and his wife have been in the group since the very, very early days. They've seen it go from 300 people to almost 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're one of those ones that love scotch, love bourbon, love it all. And and Macallan was the 12 Burgundy box was the first sherry bomb, because I had accidentally, and I've told this story before on the show about my first scotch experience. I bought a bottle of Lafroig to share with my future father-in-law to try to win him over. And I didn't know peat, non-peat. I didn't know what to. So I thought all whiskey was this smoky campfire.
Yeah.
It's
ocean log. And when I tried
ocean log, I love that.
When I tried Macallan 12, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like,
right.
It's this there was this revelation of, oh, there's so much out there in the realm of single malts. Mm-hmm. The problem you have nowadays is the demand is so incredible that it's some of these traditional things that they've been doing for many, many years, it's hard to keep up.
Absolutely.
So there's been rumors of peat bogs running low on Isla.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sherry thing has gone from sherry to sherry finish to sherry seasoned.
Yeah.
And and with some mixed results, some phenomenal results overall in the category.
Mm-hmm.
I've been extremely happy. I know that I'm real happy you brought 1, 2, 3, and 4 because on our last trip to Tennessee, the Jack Daniels pick, we killed the 2, and just spending the evening with the 2 between 5 or 6 people, I really grew to just it made me realize how much I missed sherry bombs, like these heavy, heavy, rich. And then I've got 3. I haven't opened it yet. And then last night we opened 4 at the house.
You haven't opened 3 yet.
I haven't opened 3 yet.
You're in for a treat.
Yeah.
Have you had them all?
I've not had any of these, so I'm really looking forward to
I'm
this.
I'm so happy I brought all my books.
I stick to the sherry down the middle of Macallan's. That's my experience.
Going back to what you were saying was 12 being your first bottle, that gave me a little bit of a goosebump sensation because that's one of my favorite things with working with such a prestigious or well-recognized brand. I'm sure it comes with responsibility, but I get really beautiful, nostalgic nods like that on a daily basis. People will come up and say, you know, I bought Macallan's. This was the first scotch that I drank because my father or my grandfather or my uncle always had a glass.
Yeah.
And like those sorts of things that really, as a bartender, that's where I started coming through and telling stories about why we as people want to gather around a glass and imbibe liquid and celebration is really kind of this tremendous motion, right?
I completely agree. And I have another real quick story about
Open it while you tell it.
That's near and dear to my heart about Macallan.
We're going 2, yeah?
Yeah, let's start with 2.
Lovely. Hurricane Harvey, you know, was horrible for a lot of people in the city of Houston last year. And so friends of ours who were in the spirits business, good friends of my wife and I's, we ended up crashing with them for a few days. Kelly Lynch just turned 50 years old. Happy birthday, Kelly.
Happy birthday.
good friends of ours. They're in the wine business. But at any rate, he had a 1995 bottling of Macallan 25.
Oh, that's right.
And that's
right.
Still that's to this wonderful. Day the only time I've ever had Macallan 25. And it kind of ruined me for scotch for like the rest of my life. It was so gorgeous. And that was my first drink after being rescued from our home. So.
That's amazing.
Really, I will never forget that. Yeah.
And that's a sherry bomb that's completely in line with it. And
yeah, thank you.
I love that term, sherry bomb.
Yeah.
Just the idea that we're having people say the words sherry in a, you know, in a kind manner is really interesting to me. I've worked with sherry in a long time in cocktail worlds and wine development and those sorts of things. And it always gets this really bad rap. Like, we always imagine that it's Miss Havisham or like our curmudgeon-y great aunt that's drinking a glass. And it's really, it gives so much character to things, right?
I agree.
But what am I doing talking? Let's taste.
That is beautiful.
So addition 2. And this was released before I joined the company. I just hit my 1 year with Edrington and the Macallan on the 18th.
Cheers.
So cheers to that. But this is one of the expressions that really made me feel as though I was at home with the continuation of having a conversation, not only about great spirits, fine production methods, but about people in place.
Yeah.
The addition series started, you know, we had one, which is really kind of an open conversation about cask types that we use the Macallan and the combinations of those and how we can create complexities and intensities and flavor, aroma, palate, nose, outside of an age statement. Right? And still allow it to be price point accessible to our consumers and also give you an opportunity to collect. So it's like three birds with one stone.
This is retail for like 100, right?
Roughly? Yeah. All 95-ish.
Yeah. So
it's something that for years, as the Scotch industry moved more towards NOS or no age stated whiskey, there was a lot of controversy around it. But as we've seen, I think most people who were blaring that horn of being upset, I think that's all but pretty much calmed down. There's still some lingering conversations, but Ardbeg has released some of – they were one that got caught up in the – you know, because you demand a very expensive price for something that is should inherently be – well, not inherently be cheaper, but the point was is that all that kind
of – Well, the thought is it should be cheaper, right?
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
What I think too. When I see age stated, my first initial thought as a consumer is – wow, like that really took some time. And my first thought is this is probably going to demand a premium.
Well, and the problem that causes is people began to associate the higher the number, the better it has to be, right?
Right.
And as many of us know in the bourbon world, a 23-year-old bourbon isn't always what you want and let alone spend $300 on. So there are much more – I can't talk this morning –
it's early.
More people would prefer that I know a 12-year-old cask strength bourbon to a 23-year-old.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've certainly become one of those.
And I think that there's it alludes to a quality almost. We've been almost trained to believe that. Age statements came about in the 70s and we had an excess of American blended whiskeys. We had a bunch of blended scotches hitting the market and they were prevalent. We had a bunch of single casks that had been sitting for a long time that we needed to move. And so age statements became a selling point. But there is quality in that conversation as well, but not consistently. And it shouldn't be a relied fact. Like you're saying, especially when we talk about American whiskeys, we have thermal lag in this nation that most other places that are producing whiskey maybe don't see. So what used to be a 12-year-old bourbon out of Kentucky that we loved, now with the way that climate changes and maybe rickhouse development and building materials or even things that are really cool and innovative like what Woodford does with simulation of seasoning in their rickhouses, we have a new conversation about age statements out of, you know, the necessity of the earth, what's happening in our climates and what's happening in our places of production. I've had some of the best bourbon in America, I mean, whiskey, is out of Mendocino County, California. Logap is this tremendous brand. I've had 2-year-old and 3-year-old whiskey that has rivaled some of the others in complexity and flavor. I think that there's something to be...
Logap?
Logap. It's the name of the...
Are they in Texas yet?
The valley. Yeah, absolutely. They've been in Texas for, I want to say, about 3 or 4 years was when they started developing the brand. This is Crispin Cain, and he distills for craft distillers. This is essentially the same place of production that Germaine Rabanne brandy comes from.
Okay.
So it's a cool conversation. He joined the group and this is from what I can remember from my visit. We selected a barrel at the time to actually, we have a single barrel at the Bad News Bar, which is where I worked for quite a while. And I had the great privilege of going out with Justin Burrow, the owner and proprietor there, to select a cask of this really beautiful whiskey. But it's kind of insane to have those conversations when we've been trained to believe age statements allude to quality. And really what we've had, I break it down and guests want to ask or, you know, friends want to ask, why is this as expensive or why isn't this as, you know, thought about to be quality? And what does an age statement tell us? Like, that's the question that I love to ask. What does an age statement tell us? It tells us exactly how long this spirit sat in that place in that cask. And that's it. It doesn't tell us anything else. And when we think about that from a production standpoint, I'm such a romantic for people in place that I want to hear a heritage story. I want to know who's doing what, who's part of the blending team, those sorts of notions that when you think about anything out of an age statement, you're essentially going and boiling it down to how do we make a good whiskey that's great because it's great, not because of how old it is. So you're opening, you're unshackling your distiller from a responsibility to a number to the responsibility to our palates, you know, and to our hearts and our minds as well. You know, there comes an opportunity to tell a greater story and sometimes make a really fine whiskey.
Oh, for sure. That's delightful. The cask strength that was released a couple of years ago was the bomb.
Oh, yeah. And that's why Classic Cut came back, right? Was we had released single or
let me ask you that. Why? So there was the cast strength was released and it people went nuts, right? What was the thought behind not calling it Cast Strength Edition 2 as opposed to Classic Cut?
You know, I think
and that may not be something.
I don't really know on the marketing side of what that name was. I think it was kind of a different way to have that conversation in the Macallan, because the last thing that we want to do, we talk about Macallan and obviously production first and foremost, because it is a conversation of perfection and time-honored tradition. So when we introduce big bomb words that are attraction notes, when I think about cast strength, I have an idea of what that is. And I also know that it's a pretty flooded and market. It's a really great sales pitch. It's a great way to get product moving. It's, you know, an easy thing to get attention. I think that Macallan and the way that it is, it doesn't want to be too flashy because it already is. So cast strength.
It's pretty on the high end of luxury.
Pretty bougie.
Absolutely. And then Classic Cut is kind of a new conversation of saying, you know, classically we're doing something and the cut isn't there or whatever that combo of words is, but it doesn't necessarily jump off of the shelf as saying, buy this because it's a fad.
Yeah, sure. No, it doesn't. It's very subtle.
You kind of do a little bit of a research, or even if you're, you know, scanning box and you see that ABV pop out at you, you're like, whoa, that is ridiculously high.
58 or something.
For me personally, that would jump out big time if I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And so we released the cast strength and then we ran out. And as much as people went crazy for it, it was like a riot in the streets when it went away. Yeah. So I think that bringing Classic Cut back, especially not under that same name, means that there's some ability to kind of maybe in time play with the combinations of casks or what have you when we have those expectations. But we released it again last year, 16-17, as a one-year release. And we kind of marketed that for about 6 months. We were telling our distributing partners, you know, this is collectors. This is a big time thing. I was trying to hoard some away and keep it for myself. And, you know, I was giving it as every gift opportunity that I possibly could, because it's something that we don't see with the Macallan in heritage and lineage. And then the demand was so incredibly great that we said, there's no way we can't
you
keep
can't
going.
Keep up with it. Going.
So we're releasing it and it'll be a yearly batch kind of labeling and those sorts of things. So keep your eyes peeled. It's
so,
always
so you're
be
doing
available.
The additions as well as the Classic Cut
Classic
release
Cut.
Every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Classic Cut's going to remain to what it is. There isn't going to be a lot of or change there, but the addition is always going to be a different story, which is something else that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Actually I had some questions about that.
Yeah.
So can I see that box?
Yeah. Yes.
So, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, so you guys did a collaboration, right? So
yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I mean, creative collaborations are wonderful, and we don't see them a lot. We do see them a lot in the spirits world, but we don't really have a conversation about we have, you know, two distillers coming together to create something really special. Yeah. The thing that I love about these two, the two and the three, are that they're collaborations with individuals, you know, maybe from a similar or a tertiary kind of industry, but it's really a conversation of saying, you know, both of let's make a whiskey together because your life, your passion, and your professional career revolves completely around your palate and your nose, but in a different way than mine. So we can create a whiskey through a lens that no one else can create. And that's really what we're seeing. Well, the Salar de Con Roca is almost a spoon-fed perfection idea. You know, you're asking the three brothers that each play different roles within maintaining and running what has been voted the world's best restaurant, you know, 2 or 3 years running. Yeah. It seems like a shoe-in for, wow, that's going to be a phenomenal whiskey. But what it's doing is it's adding a level of thought to taste, right? So what do we perceive in a culinary vein that we don't necessarily perceive in a liquid form? And so bringing some of those complexities is really cool. That's
a touch
great
more.
Idea.
I'm
enjoying
absolutely. It's quite
enjoyable. Definitely keep the pour going.
It's a bit more, and as we get into three, which I mean, I think is complex beyond
thank you.
You know, sight and most of the other expressions is there's range, right? There's your nose perceives things that are a bit more complex than a lot of the core range. We're moving away from those dried sultanas, those baking spices, those rich fruit cake kind of notes that we see in the sherry.
Yeah, so that's these glasses, by the way.
They are. Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, that. These are our new alternative to Glencairn's, the Luigi Bormioli. Yeah. They're Italian crystal. We're using them for the event this year, and I gotta tell you, I've enjoyed Glencairn's. I mean, they are iconic. There's no argument that they're iconic. But that little nub that forces my pinky out when I'm trying to drink, you know, I really enjoy this because I feel like I'm getting a really good, decent nose. I feel like it's presenting it to my face a little better.
Yeah, you have some standoff.
Yeah, anything I'm excited in my big hands and, you know.
Anything that makes you feel fancy and grip. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I'm always love a good stem.
How do we get Houston Bourbon Society collaboration for Macallan blend.
That's a great idea.
We're the largest single market group in the nation, so you can add that to the thing as opposed to like famous.
I don't know. I'm really not sure how. I mean, I can tell you what is important about the collaborations that we have created, and it's you see it in several different aspects of Macallan in all different ranges of the line. So take in consideration. Let's talk about a partnership. That exists within the 1824 Master Series. That's a tangible partnership. So you have a pyramid of sorts. We have Rare Cask. We have The Reflection. We have Number 6 and we have Macallan M at the Pinnacle. In those two top tiers that we have, Macallan M and Number 6, we see a price point jump there in expression, right? Do we know why? And that's a lot of people don't remember or don't realize or haven't been told. Even looking at the bottle, there's something very different about those decanters, if you will. That's because for the fine, as that
the crystal and the
So we've partnered with Lalique, the world's best crystal creator.
Oh, they do some incredible stuff
to hold what we perceive to be a peerless spirit. You know, the world's maybe most prestigious or luxurious expressions that are coming from the Macallan outside of age statements. But really, so those sorts of collaborations or partnerships aren't new to the brand. I think that having the human terroir aspect is where we're talking to people that are so prevalent in their industries or have such a knack for excellence that it makes sense to align. You know, it's just an easy partnership. It makes sense, the best with the best. So with the Rocca brothers, you have three gentlemen that are all brothers. There's about a generational gap between the two oldest and the youngest, and they all hold different points of control within this restaurant that has been voted the world's best restaurant twice over. Mm-hmm. And each one brings something different to the collaboration. I think that as we, as people, get more interested and we have things like platforms like the Bourbon Society to exchange our ideas and conversations and tasting notes and good times.
With mixed results
from time to time. But those are all good things, right? I mean, shaking and stirring is the nature in which we make and drink cocktails. It's natural that our conversations and our mentalities around products and, you know, production and innovation remain in that nature as well, I think. I don't think there's anything wrong with exchanging ideas, especially if they don't align. That's how you grow and learn.
I think that's how you progress further, right?
There's
varying levels of industry knowledge. I mean, I'm for one.
The problem that you have, and I'd love to address that for a minute.
Yeah.
The problem you have with varying levels of industry knowledge is, you know, and I'm going to butcher this quote, but there was an old quote about the unknowns, right? There's the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns.
That's right.
You only know as much as you think you know.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so the problem you have in the Facebook world is you can have someone who's incredibly knowledgeable that his knowledge or their knowledge, don't want to assume their gender,
sure,
is from a certain perspective to a certain point.
Yep.
And trying to inform them of something or trying to talk, to speak on something that is beyond their experience will often make people feel, I don't want to say emasculated, but may make
uncomfortable.
They may take it as an offense.
So right.
They aren't necessarily open to learning something new or seeing it from a perspective that goes beyond their experience. And they'll even be upset with you.
Right.
It's
a defense mechanism.
Correct.
So we all learn differently, and sometimes people aren't really excited about not knowing what a peer knows.
Right. So in the realm of online, the positive of having this open forum, the one way that all three or four tiers can intermingle and provide feedback, is you are seeing it from a brand's perspective. You're seeing the consumer's point of view. From the consumer perspective, they're learning so much more, right?
That's right.
The one thing that I've absolutely loved and endorsed is the someone that was very new to whiskey a year ago who was drinking just a standard pour, something that's well established, you know, let's say I always use Balvenie 14 Caribbean Cask.
Because that's a very great pour
that everyone can enjoy.
Yep.
But a year later, they are now borderline experts on the three-tier system and every topic of whiskey. So there's this – and that's the great thing about the age of information that we're in is people can almost Google and learn almost anything.
It's ubiquitous.
Well, that's the golden thing about the time – what a time to be alive is everything that we need to know is at the tip of our fingers. But then with that is also watered-down ideas or misinformation.
Or spinning opinion as fact. Something that's pretty pervasive sometimes, which is unfortunate.
I think there's something else that we haven't really talked about when we're discussing, you know, learning and exchanging ideas around spirits is that lest we forget, a lot of this is incredibly subjective.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, how annoyed do we get when we hear sommeliers say that things taste like lanolin or fresh mowed grass? I never taste asphalt.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There are some that I never taste.
As I've grown and learned, I've understand, you know, the flavor affinities that they might be alluding to, but really I've understood more than anything that this has an ability to conjure a memory or a time or a place, something that is completely and utterly mine. And it's hard for me to translate that in a way that everyone can universally understand. So I always try to tell people when we're tasting, especially it should be interactive. Tell me what you're tasting. But also, don't ever let anyone tell you you're wrong.
Yeah, don't be embarrassed about it. Yeah,
you should never be embarrassed about what you're smelling. Yeah. And don't go for the obvious, you know, coffees, vanillas, those sorts of things. Tell me something that it reminds you of. You know, whether it's maybe the way that a mildewed lawn smelled after a big rainstorm at a soccer field. Sometimes I smell whiskey and that's what Pete translates to me. Yeah. You know, I'm like, that reminds me of the Bear Creek. Yeah. The Bear Creek Park after it rained for 8 weeks and we finally got our pitch back to practice. It's like, there's some things that we maybe don't know how to explain because we don't know what those chemical compounds are.
We're not as eloquent as we, with some other people.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. And it's a fun exercise to express yourself outside of what we perceive to be right ways and wrong ways of tasting. It's like if you explain things in, you know, if you personify your whiskeys or if you think about your whiskeys as characters, you might be able to explain them better. And we see that kind of, there's this really great thing happening in the wine world where
Sandbox.
Yeah, producers are kind of creating spirits in that way or wines that way. There's a producer, I believe it's an Austrian couple, and they're producing wine from, I believe, a single vintage. But somewhere along there, there's growth in different varietals, but it's the same wine or the same grape variety. So they're aging the people that they depict on the bottle and they're describing the wine as people. So as the vintage changes, the face on the label gets older.
Yeah.
Or those sorts of things. That's where you're asking people to think about spirits in a way that they can understand.
Or the way that 19 Crimes has that.
That's cool.
The hologram.
You know, we were talking about Danielle just this morning. Danielle, Cheryl, a few of the girls in the industry, in the town, we all get together.
They're very friends. Yeah, they're all close.
We watched The Bachelorette, and Danielle brought one of those bottles
of wine. Danielle's story, for those wondering.
And yes. And she brought one of these bottles of wine, and there's apparently an application that you can use where you line it up with the barcode or the front label, and it tells you
life.
A story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's such a cool – and that's like – what a time to be alive where we have this innovation and technology to tell.
Augmented reality?
Yeah.
Shut up, Jack.
It's wild. Thanks, Jack.
Augmented, artificial, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Preston, you want to try this?
You should want to try this. This is one of my favorites. So continuing the conversation.
I should get a little lemon off this, a little bit.
Citrus was definitely what I noticed. And when I pulled the box, it says citrus on it.
Oh,
tons of it, right?
Sense.
And I think that the yellow box to
like
me as well.
Oil?
Yeah.
It's very.
Can you see Preston on camera?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, this is Preston, guys. Say hi, Preston. Don't look at the camera.
You're going to break it.
What are the rules? So this is an extension to what we've been talking about as a collaboration with somebody that is a master of their craft, completely led and passioned by their palates and their noses, but doesn't make whiskey. So we're talking about Roja Dove, and he is a master perfumer. So
interesting.
Think about the nose on this spirit.
That's a fun idea. Yeah, that is a cool idea.
Think about the nose on this spirit.
It is.
We're looking at floral qualities floral. That yeah. we don't perceive outside of, you know, maybe the 1824 series sometimes, but it's moving away from those really, really kind of heavy sherried notes. It's yeah. still expressing, you know, some good sherry. There's some, you know, dried fruits in there, but there's so much fresh citrus. And usually we only see that with a high prominence of American oak. So we're looking at really yeah. finite cask selections between two people. And I say two people, really it's Stuart McPherson, who employs about 25 people to taste and to smell casks and all of our maturing.
Everything about the nose and finish is a roller coaster of aromas.
Yeah, I mean,
it is.
I almost like want to compare it to like a Sauvignon Blanc, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, it's great. Good. It's yeah. there's tons of like crisp I mean, apples and those yeah, sorts exactly. of conversations like where we're getting
throw me for a loop. Yeah,
and that's also something I like to talk about the edition series. We were talking about proof, and learning sake and learning wine really early. You learn that a higher octane or higher ABV is necessary when you're expressing different floral or different notes on your palate and on your nose. You know, the vapors are going to rise and it's going to grab some more of that, those sensations and bring it to yeah. you. That happens a little bit. I perceive a little bit more complexity and flavor profile in these because I think that it's the proof is a bit higher. It's
I look at him like an experimental series as opposed to which I've always supported. I love the idea of trying something new. It may or may not work. It may, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But you're definitely getting outside. And honestly, I don't remember the last time I got citrus from a sherried whiskey.
No.
Yeah.
And which that may be something that's actually quite common. But in my mind, I'm thinking
yeah. – dried orange peel, blood orange, yeah. those sorts of things. But a fresh citrus.
Christmas flavors lemony. Is what I always associate with
right.
yeah.
baked apple pie, you know, dark dried fruits mm-hmm. Is what I typically get from sherried whiskeys. This has got this citrus springtime,
yeah.
almost like a summer
yeah. –
I don't want to say a summer scotch, but yeah, it's got that brightness. When historically you think of that brightness as the lighter whiskeys, the unsherried whiskeys,
mm-hmm. yeah.
It's nice to kind of get a little touch of that in the sherried side. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, it opens a conversation about casks as well. You know, American oak that's seasoned with sherry is going to give, you know, by composition of what that oak is compared to European oak, it is going to give you more vanillins. It's going to, you know, chemically those things are going to elude you to believe that it's something more familiar. And when we're talking about bourbon and those sorts yeah. of spirits that see American oak. And it's interesting to, you know, play with that combination of sherry seasoning and lighter.
The finish, I'm getting a little like fennel almost, like a little mm. licorice on the.
There's some cool spice. Yeah. And I don't.
And it's lingering a little bit.
I mean, we always talk about, you know, the bourbon drinker scotch. But right. I mean, to me, this is like the wine drinker scotch to
yeah.
a degree. I mean,
that's an interesting thought.
That's kind of the way that I would describe it. I mean,
yeah,
that's delightful. It's very, very
well, you
nice.
Mentioned something that I'd like to kind of talk about a little bit. Mm-hmm. Two things. And we've got about 2.5 minutes and then we'll mm-hmm. come into the next segment and talk about it. The proofs I've noticed are they go with the additions, mm-hmm. right? So I'm seeing 48.2 for addition 2, 48.3 for addition 3, and 48.4 mm-hmm. for addition 4. Yeah. And I said this kind of off air, I'd like to hear, and I stopped you from answering. Are you guys going to cap that at some point? If you guys do 20 additions, are we going to get back up to the cash strength 60%?
No, I don't think so. 120 proof bomb? I don't think so. I think that this is actually something that it came out to me visually through, you know, working with these spirits on a regular basis. This isn't information that we get from a marketing team whatsoever. I just was looking at octanes and I'm comparing our line and I was like, oh my gosh, they coincide with the numbers of releases. But I believe that hopefully most people that are watching know that, you know, with global spirits and production, there are rules and regulations when it comes to proofing. And I don't know that we're really going to play around with it as we see here. I don't know how far it's going to go. And I guess we'll discover it year at a time.
Sure.
But that's definitely something that I'm really interested in asking team now. But yeah, I'm not sure that we'll ever jump out of this range. I think that there's something like a sweet spot when it comes to octanes that express themselves differently, you know, and when we get higher proofs, we're going to lose some of the complexities
that are perceivable. It might cover up some things.
Absolutely. And I think that we have a phenomenal blending team. We have a really, really great team. So Stuart McPherson, who's probably given himself his own title. He is our master of wood. He employs 25.
That's 20, interesting.
So is Preston. Different
category. Preston's different. Okay, different master of wood. I think that he has a responsibility and also a really phenomenal gift to create something that is complex but also approachable to an array or a myriad of palates and drinkers. And so when we mess with proof to a point where it goes from, you know, inclusive to exclusive, it's kind of difficult. Yeah. So I don't see that this range is going to really push. I think that it's great to have a little more booze for your buck. That's sure. the way that I look
Agreed.
At it.
Sure, that's a great nice. Way of saying it. I've never heard that. Booze for your buck.
That's the way that I say it. You know, if we're going to get gritty about it, higher octanes are usually, you feel like you're going to get a little bit more from it.
Yeah, I've often made the comparison to Country Time Lemonade. I'd rather add my own powder concentration as opposed to buying the pre-bottle.
Yeah, I don't want the can.
Yeah.
I want the canister of powder.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I think Macallan and a lot of what I've seen really shines in that 55 plus, 58. You know, I really, classic cut wasn't quite as robust as that first cask strength release, but I still come back to it and I think, oh, I'm really, like, the more you spend time with Macallan's releases, a single bottle, as opposed to, you know, many of us have this absurd collection that we couldn't drink if we tried.
And we try every day.
Yeah.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do love, and that's one thing I love about wine, is you are committed to that bottle for the evening.
That's right.
And it's this fun, every second pour, third pour, you're learning more about it.
As it opens, sure.
Correct. And spending time with the Macallan release, I've never walked away disappointed.
You won't.
No, I haven't either.
You won't. Yeah. And I think that this is such a great thing to showcase on a platform like this.
Sorry, Jack. We've got to take a quick break. We'll see you in a few minutes.
As a bartender, we're storytellers, you know, and as ambassadors as well, you know, it's my job to educate and intrigue.
But also you get to, there's a satisfaction in introducing someone to something that you know is good.
Absolutely.
Watching their expression to me, like, that's one of the best things about sharing this stuff with folks who, I mean, I'm that guy right now. I've never had these and they're just fantastic.
Right.
But I love doing that as well with friends of mine who are like, my stepdad is newly into whiskey, and he's a huge Knob Creek private pick fan. But, you know, I expose him to different EC picks and whatnot. And just watching his face, I'm like, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
There is something, and I'm ultimately satisfying, and I think this was cut before it was said, about introducing someone to something and then to see it grow, to make a recommendation that you know is just something that is a hidden gem or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they get to – the conversation I had with Danielle last night, she was saying that she tells people all the time that she's so happy that she doesn't really have – that her products are well-liked.
Yep.
Like there's this comfort in knowing that you are standing behind something that is actually – well-loved, well-established.
Absolutely.
I mean...
And I think that there's, you know, as great as something can be in production, I think that there's also a giddiness and a joy that I receive when I have an opportunity to introduce something to somebody that is innovative in a way that they haven't really seen through a core line. It's one thing to introduce somebody to the Macallan, and the Macallan speaks beyond my ability and my relationships in this industry, which, you know, are...
It's iconic.
Right.
Yeah,
iconic.
People who don't drink know what the Macallan is. Yeah.
But to be able to introduce somebody to something that we may never see again or is incredibly special in partnership or collaboration and creation is just a cherry on top of that conversation. Is yes, you know the Macallan. Yes, you were familiar with, you know, the DNA of what the Macallan is, that heavy sherried European oak influence. But to change somebody's mind, and that's really what my job is and what Daniel's job is to do, is to take something that is iconic and recognizable and to change the way in which we're talking about it. How do we change the landscape of conversation around single malt scotch? And my job is made easy when we have access to things of this nature, you know?
Mm-mm-mm.
It's kind of a shoo-in.
Yeah.
My work here is done.
So the other thing you mentioned I wanted to touch base on, and we've got a few minutes before I want to dive deep into this Highland Park segment. Yeah. Is you mentioned sherry seasoned casks, and we kind of touched on that a little before.
Yeah.
While we're pouring edition four, walk me through, because the perception, and we've talked about this before, historically these long processes of producing a quality spirit, were manageable. But as the love and passion for the industry grows, it's becoming harder and harder to keep up. It's almost like if everyone had a car on the planet, we'd be back in that oil crisis again from
the
70s.
Well, living in Houston, we know that most of the people in our world
do. It wouldn't be so bad.
Sure. So there's things about the Macallan that, you know, we're very, very prideful about. Time-honored tradition is one. Obviously, sherry seasoning, sherry casks, maturation in sherry comes from domestication of necessity, right? So we made spirit based on extra yield of barley as farmers. Where did we put the spirit? We wanted to send it to a friend. We put it into a container that we had access to that was probably holding something like sherry or brandy, because that's what was being imported to the, you know, European crowns around us. But what's interesting is that through time.
A little touch more because I like this
absolutely.
Edition.
When we talk about sherry seasoning, we're not just talking about cask production. We're talking about an actual industry that we're using to piggyback to create products, right? So sherry, main point.
Yeah.
Sherry's dying. Sherry is not. It's
not a strong category.
It isn't a strong category, and it damn us for that, because it's something that as experienced drinkers and as evolved palates, we have a responsibility to these sorts of things, because if we want to see more of this, then we must do our part.
Well,
however,
see, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me just add something in here. The problem that you run into is if you do something that takes, you know, you've got to age sherry in a barrel for X amount of years and then use that barrel to age Macallan for another 12 years or whatever. It's becoming harder and harder to keep up. And then, of course, a matter of resources. So your two options are this. Your option one is Macallan realizes we can't keep up with this, so we just do away with our sherry expressions.
That will never happen.
Correct.
Thank God.
Right. And thank God.
If that occurs,
because that would change your brand completely.
Well, our work here
would
be done.
Well, you'd get away from what the Macallan truly is.
The Macallan's able to get away from what it truly is. Like we're talking about that DNA in fun expressions where we have combinations of casks and we're talking
about. The spirit's
about,
not lost.
Exactly.
The spirit of Macallan, I mean.
The day that we can't have access to the thing that is absolutely at the core of our production methods and incredibly important, which is our cask production. We spend 10 times the industry standard in, you know, crafting, sourcing our wood, crafting seasoning, which we're talking about now, and then sourcing that stuff. So really, when we care for our casks, that's we spend so much money on that, but we also spend time, right?
Yeah.
We air dry our staves and lots. We're shipping full lumber from Ohio and Kentucky to Jerez de la Frontera, which is your Spanish.
Well
done.
How many times did you
that
practice
incredible.
That before
Yo hablo español.
Oh, okay.
Un poquito.
Fair enough.
Yo estudio en la universidad, pero yo necesito
practicar. I have no idea.
Yes, and es casi perfecto. So I just told you guys a bunch of nothing. So we ship, do so much work to maintain this process. We spend so much money and so much time that when we make a joke, when we're presenting, we say, it takes 100 years for the tree to grow.
Yeah.
It takes one year for us to lay it in staves.
On that note, there is an incredible exhibit at the new distillery that literally spends probably, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes. And you actually, there's this oversized barrel that twists and you actually step into it and the barrel closes. So you're inside a barrel and it becomes a projection screen and it goes through the Macallan's process of
cask production.
It's unbelievable.
Seasoning is kind of a term that maybe is questionable. Does seasoning mean that we are just seasoning for a moment or two? We lay our seasoned casks. So we're essentially renting sherry from bodegas, right? We say renting because it's important that once we're finished seasoning these casks, we give it back to them for an opportunity to continue their business. So what we're doing is creating casks in the specifications in which we need based on the type of wood, so American or European oak that's both sent to Spain. And it's
Quercus alba or Quercus robur, just in case
that's
you're wondering.
The Latin term.
Yeah, I wanted to give you the actual
let me write
Latin
that
term.
Uh-huh.
I can speak Latin.
Alphabet.
I can also a little bit more pig than true, but it's fine.
Yeah.
But she just
called me a pig.
Yeah, she did.
No, I speak pig Latin. You speak the true, the romantic last one.
No, I really don't. I'm just
a couple of ginger pigs.
I just remember
over
holding
here.
On to that. Yeah.
I think that seasoning is an interesting conversation because, like most things that allude to a process, we use them as a marketing tool or a scheme to sell. And when we're talking about the Macallan, right, we lay these casks to season for a year. So it's sitting with this sherry for at least a year, right? So depending on the bodega or the type of oak, we then dump that cask.
So when you guys season casks, you let it sit for a year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Longer than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, we're looking, and that's a variety depending on the type of cask and what bodega we're talking about. We use several different bodegas based on the type of casks that we're making.
For those who don't know,
a bodega is a sherry producing house.
There you go.
There we go.
Learn something new. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's also a small store on the corner of any, you know, any intersection in New York.
In New York City.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You need, you need an apple, you go to the bodega.
You go to the bodega. Yep.
You need a sherry season cask, you go to a different bodega.
It's become like an English word.
Different types of bodega. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just know that there's, and that's the whole point, is if you do, if you can't keep up with the process, then you can either innovate or die.
Sure.
That, and that's as simple as that. That's what companies
that's
do.
That's what business is.
That's what business is, right. Yeah. So you either change the way you do things and find ways to kind of sublimate.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say it confidently, and then no one will know.
It sounds fantastic.
To sublimate
the
process and to kind of innovate and find new ways to produce this iconic drink.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're still putting a lot of time and effort into the product.
Sure.
But people are so quick to kind of dismiss seasoning or finishing. And one of my favorites from the Glenmorangie line, the La Santa and Quinta Rubin, I could drink
it's beautiful
all day. Yeah, and anytime someone asks, hey, I need a $45 scotch. I've never had it. I don't want to spend $200.
Right.
Glenmorangie La Santa. Like, easy.
Do yourself a favor.
So I'm with you. I'm a lot more positive than I think most people might be, but the experimental collection, everything that you guys are doing, the blending, the process, I said I love the 12, but these are not – I mean, they're just as good.
They're just as good, and if not, you know, and depending
and
on the type
robust,
of drinker you are.
Right?
Like,
so
we talked about how I'm a storyteller first and foremost, and I'm so attracted to the human aspects of terroir just as much as the production geekiness. But when we give something to a general consumer that maybe doesn't want to know the phenol parts per million or the amount of time that we're sherry seasoning and when we're talking about the Macallan, you give somebody something that is – like them to attach themselves to. And so they have an ability to develop a love and a care for a spirit class that maybe they didn't really care about when we're only talking about production.
Yeah, I think in today's day and age, you know, consumers really appreciate craftsmanship.
Sure.
And it's kind of this almost not that it makes it
especially.
This kind of makes it feel a little local. And there's like you said, there's something to attach to that you can say, you know what, I'm not just drinking this because it's the Macallan.
Right.
You know, I have this story on the back, you know, that I can identify with.
Something we mentioned, and just as viewers and listeners, if you've ever have an opportunity to peruse through the Scotch aisle, take a peek at the Macallan bottles. If you've ever been, you know, felt like you've been cheated out of production information, everything that you could ever want to know is here for you, and it's sometimes overlooked. But do continue.
Sure. No. I think it's something Wade would appreciate. You know,
Wade doesn't appreciate it. I don't know what he. No,
Wade's great about transparency and information.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And this the fluffery and some stories of like my Al Capone's secret recipe from night. That nonsense is not appreciated. Yes.
Favorite Hammer story of that.
I remember working my first craft program in Pimpleton Rye was our favorite. And someone said, is that Al Capone on there? And I said,
careful, they're sponsors of the show.
Well, that's great. I love the
whiskey. I'm just kidding. They're not.
I was going to say, they're a Brown-Forman. Somebody said, well, I think more about syphilis than I do about rye whiskey when I think of Al Capone. And I said, okay. Well, that's good to know about history and heritage when we're
dark and interesting.
Try this whiskey.
But when we use heritage and people as stories, we have to kind of be careful about what we're actually aligning with and how we're discussing things.
Sure.
I think that's a moment in my life that will always stick out.
I almost made a joke. I'll save for off air. let's talk Highland Park because it is such. I think it's in the age of being. Not, I don't. Let me try to find the right way to word this. I don't know how sales are doing. I do see a lot of growth in the brand.
Nice.
But it's something I think not enough people are talking about.
Right.
It's one of the.
Agreed.
It's this, right?
It's a dark horse right now.
So above a certain point in your whiskey experience, which can you hear me? I know I'm kind of always fluctuate. Above a certain point in the whiskey experience, there's a fanaticism for Highland Park.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Below a certain point, it's not quite talked about as much. And there's this push to kind of introduce people to it. But it's always that great introduction to the difference between Isla Peat and Orkney Peat or wherever they – I don't know.
Orkney.
It's Orkney,
You know,
I know they're on Orkney, but I don't know if they get their peat from Orkney.
We do. We get our peat 7 miles from the distillery from Hovister Moor. And we're looking at about 4,000-year-old peat coming out of those bricks. There's something else when we talk about Highland Park, and I agree with everything that you're saying. And fortunately for me, in the echelons that I bartended in last were craft-oriented accounts, so I saw Highland Park. But when
Which one's Highland Park?
I
can smell it and tell you.
I think it's like McAllen.
This is Highland Park.
Yeah. This is definitely Highland Park.
So this is Magnus, and we can talk about the fact that I've brought in all non-age statements or all NAS stuff here today.
No, we definitely don't have to. I'm totally cool with it.
But what I want to do is at least that's part of that obligation we have to changing the landscape of conversation. Yeah. So we get all of our peat from Hobbister Moor. And the thing that's interesting about Highland Park, which I mean, we as Texans have a certain disposition about us, and that is if it ain't getting done, we do it ourselves. There's a level of resourcefulness. There's a certain level of tactfulness that comes from all sorts of things. But when we talk about islands and island life, it comes from geographical boundaries, right? It comes from necessity in the most supreme form, a method that's, you know, produced that we use to malt barley comes from actually needing a heat source in a place that is so stricken by gale force winds that wood can't grow there.
Right, there's no trees, yeah.
What makes Highland Park really special on the palate and on the nose is you get this floral sensation, right? It's heathery, it's honey. The only thing that does exist outside of, you know...
Such an interesting smell.
It is,
you know,
Highland
Park is so unique in there.
It's the biomass and the peat is completely... It's almost this compact of floral heather. So heather is a small shrub that forms and it gives floral notes and this really, really rich honey. And so when we're pulling this, you know, this huge aspect of terroir 7 miles down the line from High Park, which is where our founder, Magnus Jensen, illicitly distilled for quite some time before being caught in 1798, which is essentially the year that we decided to establish.
That's gorgeous. Yeah.
Magnus. So yeah, this was a homage or a tribute to him. And what it is, I mean, this is basically the same
barbecue
peat combination that we see in the 12 year, but what we're recognizing here, and it's a little sweeter, right, than we would imagine. I brought 12 just in case we need a comparison.
It's still very light. Yeah.
It's high proportion of sherry season American oak.
It's light on the palate, but it's as you percolate or as you breathe through the tasting, it's so robust in the aromatic portion of it.
Absolutely.
I say barbecue because that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of charred oak.
It does.
But just charred oak, not sherry charred oak, not, you know, I mean, it's wood, right?
What you're saying is no different in peat proportion. We're not even talking about a change in post-distillation PPM, and that's phenol parts per million. That's essentially the chemical way to trace how much peat is in your spirit, basically, for anyone who doesn't know and for everyone who does.
Is the PPM a direct correlation to how smoky it is? Because I've heard otherwise.
No, I mean, thinking about.
I think there's a point.
About way that peat expresses
itself. Because Octamore
is like 150, I think.
So I think it's a little
They're going for the big bucks, you know?
That's expensive.
They're going for the belt.
Yeah.
Well, they are the most peated whiskey at like 200 plus parts per million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think at a certain point, it's got to be the way it's expressed because Lafroy is, I think it's only 28 or 32 parts per million.
Yep.
And it is a punch in the throat.
Yeah.
Well, you're thinking about places in terroir, right? So your peat changes based on where you are on an island or a little bit where you source. And I don't really know where
close.
They do it.
Brooklady and Lafroy are
pretty close.
Close, but they're on opposite sides of the island. And they're not – and Bowmore's right in between. And,
yeah.
And they're three different expressions of peat, 100%.
It's Brunicolati, by the way. Sorry, I was just there.
I'm sorry, what?
Brunicolati.
That's incorrect. Yeah, it's Brooklady.
That's not what I heard over there.
Okay, well, person's wrong.
Agree to disagree.
That person's wrong.
You're telling a Scottish he's wrong. A Scottish guy.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Have you ever seen the movie? So Neat came out. The movie on bourbon came out a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Last year?
Yeah.
This year. It came out this year.
Yeah.
Neat. There was one done for Scottish, and they covered Isla, and he called it Islay the entire time.
Yeah.
So the Scots aren't always right.
Also, there's a great resource for knowledge.
I've also been to Brooklady, by the way. The guy called it Brooklady.
Fair enough.
A YouTube video that explains to you how to say every distillery and weird word in between.
Brian, the guy.
Yes, he's amazing.
I love that guy.
We just watched.
I mean, Super Troopers.
The girls, our children are getting older, and someone might judge me for this, but they wanted to watch The Ring. And so
that's scary. Don't let them.
2002, right? So they're old. I mean, they're teens, right?
Yeah.
So they're getting up there. And there was nothing there was nothing inappropriate other than just being scary and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So we, my wife and I watched it beforehand to decide whether or not we wanted them to watch it.
That's great.
And
I like
he's
that.
In it and he plays the dad.
Oh, okay.
He
yeah.
kills himself.
Oh, yeah.
He electrocutes himself.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, sorry, 2002.
We haven't seen the ring.
16 years ago. 16 years ago, yeah.
16 years ago. But he is such, I was looking at him in that film, and I'll be honest with you, I was thinking about his health. He's such an unhealthy looking guy.
He is,
and,
yeah.
And he's such a profound Scottish actor that's he's mastered the American accent, so you never hear the Scotsman in him.
That's right.
But he,
sort of like Gerard Butler.
Yeah, yeah.
So
master
he,
of the American accent.
Yeah,
very
handsome
impressive.
Of the opera.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, except he does a thing where he talks out the side
he
of his mouth.
He does do that.
I thought that was just what his face did. I thought that's the way his face works.
I always thought it was him forcing the American accent.
Oh, like you can only do it this way?
You can only talk out the right
side. This is my American side. The rest comes out Scottish.
Yeah, he has to talk American.
You know what? When I try to, I mock Kieran Elliott, who is was my East or West Coast ambassador, and he's a Scotsman, and his favorite line is, you don't swirl your whiskey, Scotsmans
like
are agitated enough. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and that's his favorite thing. But
that's actually really great.
It's funny,
that's
right?
That's really great, yeah.
But I realized in trying to say, like, I would like a wee dram of whiskey,
that
you roll your is kind of like Spanish. So I'm like, okay, well, if I learn this language, then I'll certainly be able to mimic a Scotsman, or I could just keep talking without insulting people's cultures.
I'm definitely not trying to, but I'm super proud that I can say Kragelike.
That's
like,
impressive.
That's
well done. That's
the only
done.
Thing
I'm
I can say.
I'm going to close my eyes again and imagine Gerard Butler here.
Yeah, this is Sparta.
Yeah.
And that's my Gerard Butler doing an American accent of his version of This is Sparta.
Yeah. That's good. You nailed that.
So I forgot what we were talking about. Oh, the guy just looks unhealthy.
Gerard Butler is the master distiller for Highland Park.
That's correct, yeah. So back on brand. So question about that. Are you guys doing away with the 12, 15, and 18?
Never.
Oh, good.
So this is...
I saw the new 18's got this beautiful bottle.
Yeah, so we just rebranded, and you'll know we're basically trying to have a conversation about heritage here. A bigger conversation.
We'll just keep going. Sorry.
When we talk about Highland Park, like we're talking about resourcefulness of island folk, they've been completely separated from civilized Scotland for quite some time, whether it's the geography of the Grampian Mountains or the manner in which they've been owned and... cultured, really. They're closer in proximity to Norway and Denmark than they are to Edinburgh. They're right on latitude with Anchorage, Alaska. So imagining how far they're up. They're part of an archipelago of 70 islands, only 20 of which are inhabited. And one of every five people on the Isle of Orkney can be actually traced to a descendant of Viking or Nordic culture.
It's incredible.
So it's wild. In fact,
Orkney was... Pretty sure Ben's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Orkney was traded about and actually given back to the Scottish crown as a dowry of marriage from Denmark and Sweden. So like those sorts of ideas of culture that we don't really know, but is absolutely part of their DNA and existence. This is kind of an expression that when we rebranded, we rebeveled all the bottles. We've repackaged with things like Viking honor and Viking spirit.
Yeah.
We're telling a story.
It has definitely been a big nice. Push for that. Yeah.
And it's kind of an opportunity for the people of Orkney to feel a part of the brand that they so willingly give their lives and their professions to. But it's part of the new core line, Magnus. It's price point more approachable than your 12. And what we're looking at here is a versatility that we don't see in the other marks. It's a little bit lighter because of that oak, the high percentage of American oak. We're looking at those familiar flavor profiles that we see in bourbon and American whiskeys.
Yeah.
Same peat content that you're familiar with 12, 18, 15 even. But we're essentially introducing something that's mixable in cocktails for anyone that on the on-premise or in bars that want to use it or at home. And we're giving an opportunity to have a conversation with Pete that isn't about age statement as well.
In regards to the Highland Park, my brother actually introduced me to this. And he picked up a bottle here in Houston a couple days ago that we shared. It was the Helluland. I'll butcher that.
Yeah.
It was like the Total Wine pick, it looked like.
Yeah.
It was absolutely phenomenal. Like,
So people have been going nuts over it.
It's unreal good.
Yeah, and it's crazy with Highland Park more than we see in McAllen is there's a lot of one-off innovations.
Yeah.
Which I think is really neat.
That knapsack, though.
Legit.
I'm a fall for it.
Have you guys tried Full Volume? I mean,
no, I've heard really good things.
So
we'll try it this Saturday.
So do you got, I forget his name and forgive me. It's something Craft. He works for your brand team. He's on social media. I do Whiskey Pete on Instagram and I used to get samples from you guys.
Okay.
I still get samples from you guys. Every time something new comes out, I get a little bottle of something.
Mm-hmm.
Which let me remind me to show you the ice and fire because it's really cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. So, but what he sent me, I wish I could remember his name, Eric Kraft or something. Anyways, the full volume, I'm eager to try it Saturday because I heard about it. I actually sent a request in, like, I want to try this. I got to hear about it.
Thank you.
So this is great. And there was some concern to starkly change subjects. Of you guys going NOS completely and getting rid of the 18. And I saw the new 18 packaging and the new – they're great.
They're beautiful. Yeah. So that's Dan Lingfield. He's a Danish designer. He also is from Nordic descent. And we hired him to kind of embody the new image.
I like the nose on that
a lot. So he's redone all the packaging. And there's all sorts of symbolism and motif in these new designs. But really it's a bigger conversation of how do we – visually identify with the story that we're trying to tell.
Yeah.
So not only is this new release that we have here called Valkyrie, and it's a part of a three-part series, this is actually a higher octane and a higher price point, but it is a collector's edition that we're seeing. It's part of three. So this first one is Valkyrie, and it's an honor tribute to the Valkyrie, which are the terrifying but beautiful women, sirens of sorts in the Nordic mythology realm, that would scour the battlefields to select only...
They did a documentary on that. I think it's called Wonder Woman. You'll see that the Valkyries were in that
as well. Yeah. And they definitely have sexy outfits like that. I think.
Historically accurate.
Historically speaking, yeah, absolutely. We have archives on it. It's great. But yeah, it's a story. It's a conversation with history and heritage that's hopefully going to align itself with evolution and innovation. So we're going to taste something different in Volknaut and then again in Valhalla. But Valkyrie is the first of the release. And what it means to, you know, the rest of the core line, or at least Magnus, it's essentially a same percentage of peats, but except we're flipping it. So 20 to 80%. And also we're adding a proportion of highly peated malt, which we do about two weeks out of the year. We run, it's probably the two
that's
weeks
definitely
that we
the
do.
PPMs.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Can, that's a spike. That what's the proof on this versus
so this
the...
Is, So Magnus is 40% lined, and then this is going to be...
It's crazy. So that's
45.9 5.9% difference.
That's not quite 6%, but it feels so much more...
Heavier
on the peat.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the peat changes. It's still, you know, inspired with or influenced by American oak in proportion and maturation. That's seasoned with sherry as well. So we always see sherry as well in Highland Park, our sister distillery. But there's a portion of heavily peated malt that we use. And I think most distilleries do this, if nobody knows this, that the last couple of weeks of the run before the distillery shuts down for cleaning, people get funky and they want to run peat. And we do a couple of weeks where we create a really heavily peated malt. And so, yeah, so we basically add a proportion of that. It's going to boost that peat content, but it's also going to kind of have this really nice kind of tiptoe away from Magnus or even 12. And it adds a little bit compound on that honey and sweetness too.
I've told the story of the Laphroaig and the father-in-law. The day that I decided to propose to my wife, I tried to find something special to drink at the proposal. So what we did is her brother runs was like ownership of Robin Catering, but there's food companies in Houston that kind of supply food to restaurants and bars and whatever.
Businesses,
And they had their corporate office is basically this super decked out like house and they have like a wine room. And so I blindfolded her and kind of tricked her into like, let's go look at homes. And I was going to surprise her into a home that we wanted to buy.
Sure.
And just kidding, we're poor. So I brought her.
Have a wine room.
So I brought her there. I brought her there, and we invited all of our friends and family, like 50 people. So it's one of those open concepts. So the kitchen is just in the same room as the living room.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of it just flows. Super, And so I brought her in, and I blindfolded her, and I took it off, but she was facing me, not knowing that behind her was 50 people, friends and family, you know.
That's cool.
So, and then she turns around and of course she cries and then I cry and I wrote this long, beautiful speech to say like, hey, will you marry me? And all I could do was get on one knee and just give her the ring like, will you marry? Like I everything I had planned.
Take name.
Yeah. Will you do what this ring indicates?
Everything I had written had just, and I worked weeks to write this beautiful
long thing.
And then I just was like, oh, you marry me? So she said yes, but then we opened a bottle of Highland Park 25. And that back then they used to have these wooden boxes that they would come in. Yeah, yeah, these gorgeous wooden boxes. The problem is it was old, right? So the whiskey scene here in Houston has exploded. But a few years ago, you could find stuff that had been sitting on the shelf for 10 years.
Dust hunting.
Right. Yeah, so I found a bottle of Highland Park 25. I didn't know that it was old. So
cork fell apart.
Cork fell apart. As soon as I opened it. So I wanted to keep, so we opened, but it's fine. Like, we're going to drink it. It's fine. So the whole family's drinking and we're like, this is Highland Park 25. It's Viking heritage. Look, I'm red. this is perfect. No. And what we ended up doing is, we packed up for the day and we went to go home and I set the bottle on its side. And it leaked, and it ruined the box. I still have the box.
Keep it,
but it's illegible. You can't read any of it. And I was so heartbroken because it was like this special moment. But Highland Park, Laphroaig, these brands, and Balvenie particularly, because Balvenie is our marriage bottle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So what we do is, and I've told this online before. When we first got married, we didn't have any money. I bought a bottle of 15-year-old single barrel. $100. $100.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we only take one pour out of it together, and I don't drink it at bars or restaurants. Like, if I come across a Highland Park or a Balvenie 15, I don't drink it.
Nice.
But every year we have one pour out of it together, and then at our anniversary we'll buy a new one. So that's
great.
It's tracking to last about 10 years.
Yeah.
We're 6 years in, the bottle's little over halfway gone.
When you get there,
Highland Park.
I want to jump in on this. I can't wait to meet your wife. I love that you all have tradition.
She's awesome.
Around
that's a cool story, I think you'll love her.
That's wonderful.
We
need more women in whiskey.
Oh, she's that's a big right. whiskey, and she's been posting quite a bit recently too. Oh yeah, Becky's all
she's
over
huge.
Man.
Yeah, yeah,
that's awesome.
I mean, at our wedding show, what kind of people we are? We had Jägermeister. So
hey, there's nothing wrong with that. German tradition,
which yeah.
Yeah, that's time honored as well.
Old, but those special bottles, they mean something, and Highland Parks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I've been trying to get, as a side note, which I'll tell you the whole story off air, but I've been trying to get Highland Park and McAllen to our events for 4 years. Uh-huh. And because of what they mean, I mean, McAllen has meant a lot to me and Yawante, and Highland Park has obviously meant a lot to me and my wife. Mm-hmm. Huge fan of the brands. And there was a guy here that I was going to have in, but we only really do three people. Yeah. Jesse Wood. Are you familiar with Jesse Wood? He works with Danielle a little bit. He does like a brand ambassador. But
perhaps. I don't know. Was he in Market Houston?
He's in Market, Jesse Wood. He spends a lot of time in Cigar Lounge.
I'm sure I know him.
He's in our group. I think
he's in our group. He doesn't
post much.
But when he does, it is some of the rarest bottles of Highland Park you'll ever see.
Wow. So cool.
Highland Park 30. Yeah. I had Highland Park 50 one time.
Wow.
I don't know if he was... I don't know if he was there for that. That bottle's incredible.
Wild stuff. Yeah. And I think that we have this dazzling and kind of flashy attraction and affinity for the McAllen because of what it means to us. And when we talk about the McAllen versus Highland Park, we're really talking about perfection in nuance and production versus a perfect
heritage
product
piece.
Coming from heritage.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking about very different thing. We're talking about a group and a human effort to withstand and upstand certain production methods. But this is about how do we make a whiskey that tastes the way that we feel about being.
Yeah.
Or that is an expression of where we come from, that the world can have a voyeur into a tiny place that you have to still get to in 2018 by ship and ferry and maybe life flight. And talk about this thing that has existed despite obstacle. You know, through perseverance, it's an enduring kind of love story to me. And I think that it really adds something to the array when we have that combination. It's a juxtaposition that these two brands can have, this back-to-back kind of tennis match of sorts when we talk about what is perfect of them.
And I mean, they're not even remotely similar in their profile. This is salt and pepper. This is salt,
absolutely.
Salt perfected, right. Pepper defined, just...
If you would like to try them both at once without, getting backhanded by a friend, you may have the famous Grouse, which is our blended scotch in the portfolio, which includes Glenturret, Glenrothes, Highland Park, and the McAllen. Oh. So it is a phenomenal blend, and it's a cool opportunity to see how those things blend.
How's that going for you?
So
how is it?
I blended a quarter ounce of the McAllen Edition 4 and the rest of my Highland Park.
Yeah, but did you throw it? Because that's how you really have to incorporate it.
I'm now a master blender.
That's
all right, I'll throw it.
There's your bartender in you. Throw it.
Yeah, give me a
really
jigger.
Allow it to fall into solution. Let's let it rest for about 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. So have you done this before?
Oh, there's many an opportunity yeah. to make house blends. I call them a single malt suicide.
Oh, that's not bad either.
I have all kinds of one-offs. You know, I got to be quick on my feet and my tongue.
So that's actually pretty interesting.
That's great. Wow.
It adds a sherry.
We're going to have people at the social now just blending.
If you do it at the table, I won't allow it. But take it around the corner.
So it adds the sherry sweetness to the peat, but it also, the peat kind of tones down.
Honey
the
honey comes out.
Yeah. It kind of tones down the intensity of the Macallan. So there's this balance there that's pretty pretty drinkable.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's good. Yeah, I like that.
Believe it or not, that was an hour. That was a little over an hour.
We nailed it.
So that was tremendously fun.
That was great.
And I've Will Schragas speaks nothing but like phenomenal things about
you. The best person on earth.
And Danielle. And I love Danielle, Cheryl. I know that there's like this coalition of like really powerful women in the local bourbon or whiskey scene that I know them all separately.
Oh,
I don't see them together very often.
Have the assurance in your heart that on Monday nights, we're all at Cheryl Gibbs' home. Terry may be around, maybe avoiding us, who knows?
Sure.
But we all get together and at least hopefully as often as we can and just hang out and be real humans because it's something that brought us together, but we are, you know.
You still like to drink and be
normal.
Kind of
a band of humans. Yeah, we want to have an opportunity to hang out and not work. We say no work there, but we still do.
Well, I cannot thank you both enough. Ben, I enjoyed our trip to Kentucky so much.
So did
I'm so
man.
Happy
thank
to have you,
so you
on. Like, as soon as I thought of you, I was like, this will be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And Elise, absolute pleasure to have you.
No, pleasure, Elise.
I want to have you guys back. This was, well.
I'll fly in for Pittsburgh for
this,
man.
Let's do it all. Maybe we'll fly to Pittsburgh to be with you.
I would like the ability to take this on the road at some point because there are some this is going
to come to the Steel City, man.
But there are some people I know that of notoriety I'd like to have on, and it would require me to travel.
I'm not that, but
no. Well, you're still. I couldn't thank you guys enough.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Without further ado, that's stupid. Cut that out. It's forced a habit. I always say without further ado. All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming. We will. We'll see you Saturday. Actually, this will air.
After Saturday.
The social. So the social's already happened.
Yeah.
If you were there,
we
had a great time.
We had a phenomenal time. It was amazing. There were, you don't know this yet, but we rained money from the ceiling. So it was a phenomenal event. And yeah. Thank you guys so much. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah.